The 1987 baseball season has been underway for about 1 month now, and that's already long enough to create a small mountain of data for baseball analyst Bill James. James sifts through baseball statistics, often creating his own formulas to use in place of traditional measures such as batting averages and runs batted in. He publishes his findings and his personal observations in his annual book, The Bill James Baseball Abstract. James has been called obsessed with statistics, but he says they're just a tool he uses to better understand the game.
Baseball people have all these things that they say approximately 9 million times a year. Players' peak is from 28 to 32. The players today don't spend as long in the minor leagues as they used to. All these things they say over and over and over again without ever stopping to check them out. So it's my particular niche in life to stop and check them out.
So most of the time, do the statistics you come up with support the general wisdom of the day?
Sometimes they do. The general rule is that the wisdom of the day is always overstated. Whatever it is that people think they know, it always turns out to be a little less emphatically true. A lot of them are just plain nonsense.
What's a general accepted piece of accepted wisdom that you've proved to be nonsense?
Well, in this year's book, I took up the statement that the players of today lack the refined skills because they don't spend as long in the minor leagues. And I looked at how long they spend in the minor leagues today as opposed to 1980 and 1970 and 1960 and 1940, and I found that they spend just as long in the minor leagues as they ever did. The average number of games played in the minor leagues before a player reaches the majors was about 450 in 1940, and it's about 450 now. It really hasn't changed over time. So what it is as you get older, the perception of time changes, and that causes people to think something has changed when it really hasn't.
Why do statistics work so well in baseball better than they do in other sports? People aren't as interested in statistics in basketball and football as they are in baseball.
Because the game is so orderly. It's the only game in which the players take turns. It's the only game in which the players stop. The action stops at particular points marked off at the field. The player goes to first base or second base. He doesn't stop 40 feet beyond first base because that's as far as he can get, like he would in football. The game is so orderly that it's easy to make a record of, and that makes record keeping and statistics easy.
You seem to see a certain poetry in the statistics of baseball.
Quite certainly, yes. People think that I'm just saying this, but it's really true that the way in which baseball statistics are understood is as a type of language, that when a hitter hits 300, you don't think about 30% or 30.0%. What you think, I mean, the word 300 means something. The word 40 in the home run column means power. The number 50 in the stolen base column means speed and a particular degree of speed. It doesn't mean 50 of something. Nobody, if you see 50 in the stolen base column, you don't think about 50 eggs or 50 baskets of cauliflower or 50 anything else. It just means speed. So the way in which people interpret stats is as a kind of language, and they're very capable of literature and very capable of poetry.
Your interest in history and in statistics have led you to write about players who are actually pretty obscure. You've been writing about players who many people have never heard of.
Yeah, well, baseball history, as it is written by a lot of people, tends to focus a great deal on Joe DiMaggio and Willie Mays. And I think it's equally fun to focus on Jumbo Brown and Garland Bruxton and people of that nature, yeah.
Who are these guys and why are they interesting?
Jumbo Brown was interesting because he was the biggest man ever. I think his official weight was something like 290. It was like 6'2 and 290, which made him the heaviest player ever to play Major League Baseball.
It is pretty heavy for a baseball player, for any
right.
athlete, yeah. When did you start keeping track of baseball statistics?
When I was 11 years old in 1960.
And when did you start keeping up with baseball?
About the same time, 1960 and 1959.
Did you think that when you got older that your interest in baseball wouldn't be so great anymore? Because I think that's what a lot of people expect. You know, then you grow up and then you become interested in another field and you settle in and so on. Watch a game on Sunday.
I suppose that happens to a lot of people. But there are an awful lot of real hardcore baseball fanatics in the country, which is why I make a living.
I can't help but think that you are finding some larger truth in the game of baseball.
Well, baseball reflects a larger truth, yes. Baseball is essentially nothing, and thus anything that happens in life can be seen more clearly in baseball and can be accepted more clearly in baseball, which is why it is so important to society. The baseball is always expected to clean up its act before anything else is. Racism, which is tolerated in society, is not tolerated in baseball. Drug use, which is tolerated in society, is not tolerated in baseball, because in baseball is nothing, and therefore your view of it is so much clearer than is your view of life, which is complicated with everything. Does that make any sense?
Well, I think so, but I've always thought that's one of the reasons why we don't want baseball players to be on drugs or whatever, is because they're always held up as national heroes and symbols of what it means to be American.
That's right. They are heroes. Athletes are heroes. That's why they get paid $1 million a year. It's exactly what they are.
Are they heroes to you? You're looking at the game from a different perspective than hero worshippers do, and I'm trying to figure out what kind of relationship you actually have with the athletes.
Well, I have almost no relationship with the athletes. It's not my job. But the study of heroes is not hero worship. I mean, one can write about heroes without worshiping them.
Your work is so highly esteemed, though, that I understand that a lot of players are asking you to consult with them when their contracts come up. I wonder if you ever have any ethical questions about that, about using all the information that you've compiled as a kind of observer, and using that to help make a case for someone getting a higher salary.
Yeah, it does create potential problems. Yes, I have no problem at all with baseball players getting higher salaries. The New York Yankees this year will generate income of, $40 to $50 million in all likelihood. No one has ever been able to give me a reason why George Steinbrenner should just be allowed to keep all the money. I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all to me. I think the players should get the money or get a fair share of it, and I have no problem with that at all. There are, however, potential problems with both writing about someone and helping to represent them in salary negotiations.
What problems does it create for you?
Well, my reviews of players in the abstract are not always kind. And I realized 2 years ago that the players I had been the hardest on were those players that I was, whose agents were friends of mine and people that I worked with, and thus people that I potentially helped to represent. There's a shortstop in Oakland named Alfredo Griffin, who is the favorite client of the Hendricks brothers, whom I worked with for years. My reviews of Alfredo were just tremendously harsh. The same is true of Enes Cabell, who was represented by the Rich Group, who I also represent. All of the players that I had been really hard on were players that I potentially helped to represent. And I realized that probably on some level, without being aware of it, I was compensating. I was making sure that I wasn't favoring these players by being perhaps harsher than was necessary.
When you watch a baseball game, What do you do? Are you taking notes as the game proceeds?
I have several different modes in which to watch a game. I used to scribble notes furiously, but since I have a baby daughter, I generally am keeping one eye on the daughter and one eye on the baseball game, so I shift to a more casual mode, I suppose.
Have you ever gotten into arguments with any of your fellow baseball fans who resent the emphasis on an empirical analysis of the game, on the game broken down into numbers?
Arguing about baseball is what I do for a living. So, in a sense, yes. I don't know. A lot of people are interested in following baseball. Baseball is something which exists to be enjoyed. And it can, whatever your particular bent is, can be adapted to baseball. If what you're interested in is drinking beer, you can go to a baseball game and drink beer and soak in the game and enjoy it on that level. If what you're interested in is cute guys, then there are women who go to baseball game because they think the guys are cute. Baseball is essentially nothing, and for that reason, anything can be adapted to it. If, however, the approach is that you can't possibly learn anything by the numbers, then I just ignore it. I just don't respond to that, because anyone who takes that approach is an idiot, and I'm not going to argue with idiots.
Strong words from Bill James, who's the author of the Bill James Baseball Abstract and the Great American Baseball Stat Book. He spoke with us from member station KQED in San Francisco.